Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey, Sound Opinions listeners, if you support us on Patreon, you get to listen to our podcast ad-free on Patreon.
So now, ladies and gentlemen, it is start time. Are you ready for start time?
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we'll be revisiting our interview with Israeli musician Tamar Afek. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. But first, another band from an area deeply affected by war, Trupa Trupa of Poland.
Greg, you first told me about Trupa Trupa when you saw them at South by Southwest in 2018, and you couldn't stop raving. They blew you away,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was impressive. It's very difficult to stand out at South by Southwest, and I went sort of, I just wanted to check it out because the album sounded interesting. I would say the live performance was twice as good as the album. They set an atmosphere that was very powerful. It reminded me a lot of a lot of bands from Eastern Europe that I had been familiar with, you know, the Poolnoshes and the Plastic People of the Universe aspect, very Velvets influenced, you know, Mothers of Invention influences. Mm-hmm. But there's a darkness there. And also what struck me was the minimalist poetry that the singer, Grzegorz Kwiatkowski, was putting over the top of these very layered and droning kind of backdrops. So it was a really powerful and moving experience because they were talking about their experience with war. Poland has been like sort of a punching bag in Europe.
Ravaged.
For decades. You know,
Centuries.
Going beyond that. And you can hear it in their music. Their music sounds haunted. Just as Poland, I think, is a very haunted country, and I say this as the son of, you know, Polish people who have been living in that country for, you know, generations in my family. We actually had an event scheduled with Trupa Trupa for June of 2020, but obviously that didn't happen because of the pandemic. And after 2 years without touring, now Trupa Trupa is coming back to the States. So we're glad we can finally interview the band singer Grzegorz Kwiatkowski. And we were able to do that just a couple of weeks ago. We are here with Grzegorz Kwiatkowski. We are so pleased to have you here. I'm a Grzegorz too. Grzegorz, I don't know if you knew that.
I love it when he speaks Polish.
I come from Polish roots, and as a result, I am very familiar with the pronunciation of your name. But welcome to the show. It's great to have the lead singer with Trupa Trupa with us.
Nice to hear you, nice to see you, because we see each other. And yeah, the pronunciation of Grzegorz was perfect. And to be fully, truly, for me, you were always Greg, in the way that I didn't translate it into Polish Grzegorz, but you're totally right. This is a Polish name.
Well, I have to tell you, though, one anecdote here. My mother, you know, spoke fluent Polish. Obviously, she grew up in Poland and came over after the war. And I was always Greg, you know, that I remember. But when I was in trouble, it was Grzegorz. Grzegorz, you are in big trouble right now, young man. You know, it's like
I'm feeling left out because I'm one quarter Polish. Kopaczynski.
Oh,
Icha Duma Spacz.
That's all I know.
So this is a very big surprise for me. So it seems like we are in Polish radio, right?
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
So, Grzegorz, I'm going to call you Greg from now on, okay? So for today, for today's purposes. But I mean, Trupa Trupa has been making music for a decade now. I think the first record came out in 2015, but you were a band prior to that. What was your initial impetus to start the band? Why did you want to form a rock band? Because you're obviously you're a published poet as well. Why a rock band? What was the impetus there?
I think that the answer will be a simple one, but we really, I loved music and I still love music, and my friends loved music. And when you are very young, you've got this tones of energy and kind of a narcissistic, egoistic youth power. Step, but on the other hand, when I was a little boy, I was going to the musical school and I was playing on some instruments. So for me, it was just a natural way to make it. On the other hand, you are right that I'm also a writer and a poet, so maybe I shouldn't do these two things. But no, I think that my poetry and music are connected to each other. And, you know, I think that we didn't have any program. I think that we didn't have any program and we didn't start to play music, for example, to make some message to the world. I think that year after year, we built something like a program, like a democratic program. But I think that the first thing and the last thing is always the same. So this is the love to the music and love of playing music. And you saw Trupa Trupa concerts, so you know that for us, playing gigs is really, really important, maybe more important than recording albums in the studio.
Well, and the music has always, to my mind, always been very representative of, there's a particular sensibility that Eastern Europeans have, and it's in their literature, it's in their painting, it's in their music. You know, I grew up listening to Paderewski, you know, what my parents were introducing me to Polish classical avant-garde music, and I was just like, wow, this is really radical. And then when I hear what Radiohead's doing, I go, oh, I know where they got that from. You know, that symphonic, you know, element. There's a darkness to a lot of it. And I think you, Trupa Trupa, is very much in that tradition of painting this picture of the world in a very realistic way and at the same time beautiful and abstract, but that has always been there.
Well, the name, Corpse Corpse, right? If we translate it?
Yeah, I think that even if we didn't think about that, we were always influenced by the Central European, you know, air and atmosphere. And I think that the Trupa Trupa is in some way a twitch in the musical system. I think the good thing about us is that we don't try to be as cool or as professional or as Western indie bands, that we are doing our own thing, even if we don't realize about it. And you are right that it's dark and the mood is really in some way pessimistic and dark. And in some way, I thought that maybe it's my obsession in the way that I've got an obsession on death and on suffering because of my family roots, because my grandfather was a prisoner of concentration camps and I was very close to him. But the point is that this very, very tragic war on Ukraine showed me that this is a reality. No, it wasn't my imagination, unfortunately. The world is full of suffering. Also, before the Ukraine war, it was full of suffering. But now we can see, you know, everyone can see it by the zoom of camera. And in some very tragic way, I think that this music resonates, especially in this kind of war times. We didn't want to do it. It wasn't our profile. It wasn't our program. We were just doing it in a natural, organical way. But suddenly, the reality seems more dark than music of Trupa Trupa.
Did you consider yourselves lucky? You're in the States now. We're talking to you. You guys are on tour supporting this excellent album, the fourth studio record, B flat A. As if the global pandemic wasn't enough of a challenge to a band crossing the ocean to come on tour, was there worry about, with all the turmoil in Eastern Europe and the war in Ukraine, that you'd even be able to get here?
You know, everything was possible and everything is still possible in this. I'm talking about tragic scenarios. So we are analyzing every mad, brutal step from Vladimir Putin. You know, we still don't know what will happen in next 1 week or 2 weeks. Yeah. You know, 2 years ago, we planned to go to USA in 2019, and then the pandemic started, and so we canceled it. Then we thought that we are very close to the end of pandemic era, and then suddenly the war in Ukraine started. Yeah. We are lucky to unlucky stuff, but it builds in some way our lives and our art and our music. So in some very tragic way, we used to it as a people who lives in Central Europe, because, you know, history of Poland, the biggest genocide took place in during the Second World War, and we are all from the city of Gdańsk, where the Second World War started. Yeah. This is all very strange and very weird, but the point is that we are playing, we are talking. I think that we try to give some message. I wouldn't say that we are trying to make this world even more sad. I think that we are, by our music or by my poetry, we're just trying to make some wake-up effect, wake up in a moral way, you know, that people could wake up from this very comfortable dream when you don't think about the others, you know, who are suffering. So yes, our music was also very close to history. My poetry was also very close to history. And for many years, to be fully truly, I heard from many, many people that this is a bad mix, that we shouldn't mix history and art because it can be just very flat, and it's not the era of wars. The wars are gone. We're living in the very peaceful times, and now it's time to make different stuff. So unfortunately, these people were wrong, but unfortunately, because of, for sure, you know, the war is the big tragedy, and everyone is losing.
Coming up, we're going to hear more from Trupa Trupa, then we'll talk with Israeli musician Tamar Afik. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, lemonade, shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. You know, every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island. So we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. And we are back. We are talking with the lead singer of Trupa Trupa, Zsagos, right? That's what your mom called you when she was married.
Zsagos, yes.
Zsagos. Let's get back to the conversation.
Well, you mentioned your family history, you know, going back to the Holocaust and the concentration camps. I believe your grandfather was in a concentration camp, right? And his sister as well.
Please.
You have a personal history with that, as just about anybody who was in Europe during World War II does. But you talk about this idea of denialism. This is something that you've mentioned before, and you yourself bore witness to some of that. You made a horrific discovery in 2015, right, of evidence of the Holocaust during a period when there were groups out in public trying to deny that it ever happened. Tell us what you found, Zsagos.
This is a horrible story, and it's so amazing in a bad way of being amazing that it almost sounds surreal. In 2015, me and my friend from a band, we found near the fence of the Museum of Concentration Camp Stutthof, 30 kilometers from Gdańsk, we found thousands of shoes in the forest, thousands and thousands. So we started to dig in the ground, and there were more of them. In 1945, when Red Army liberated this concentration camp, they counted these shoes. It was 500,000 pairs of shoes from all concentration camps in Europe, because Stutthof concentration camp was kind of a reparation center of leather and shoes. So there was a mountain of shoes of victims. And in 1967, the museum was established in this place. The director of the museum took just a part of the shoes, kind of, I don't know, 20,000 or 50,000, and almost 500,000 pairs of shoes, he just didn't protect it, and they were like a trash in the forest. They were lying there for decades. So we went to that new manager of this museum, and we asked him to take care of these artifacts of the genocide, and he told us that this is a trash stuff, that he will not do anything. So we gave him 6 months to make some action. He didn't do it. So we called Polish media and media outlets. They made some alert situation all around, but still the boss of museum didn't do anything. So then the Guardian came and CBC came, and a lot of world media started to talk about it. After many, many years of battle, because it was really a battle for a memory of these artifacts of the genocide, the manager of the museum took this mountain of shoes, took this almost 500,000 of pairs of shoes, and he took them on the territory of museum, and he buried them. It was, I'm so sorry for this language, but it was so stupid, it was so awful, so bad, that now it's invisible. You know, he took this big memory of these victims and he just buried it. And in some way, this is a metaphor of memory, you know. He just, in some symbolical way, said to us, shut up, you know, this is the history, this is the past, now it's gone. And in my opinion, the history is never ending. The war on Ukraine is just another very tragic example of ability of human beings to kill each other. These are very strange accidents from the life of very strange band Trupa Trupa.
Well, and you talk about, I know you've talked about these ghosts that, you know, when you listen to your music, it sounds haunted. There's beauty there, and there's darkness, but you talked about this idea of the ghosts are still with you, and you're channeling them through that music.
I totally believe in that. You know, I think that artists, especially artists, are kind of a sponge, you know, that we are like radars, or like, you know, that we are very open on atmosphere and on voices, also voices of dead people. And by the way, because this is American influence, but that's why I love so much your great American writer Edgar Lee Masters, who was living in Chicago. His Spoon River Anthology, the book about ghosts, the book about American ghosts. For me, this book was a key to the landscape of a genocide in the Central Europe. So I took his methodology, I took his idea to talk about the history, but of course, when I'm talking about history, and when we're talking about history, we are also talking about our reality, unfortunately.
If you go back to the earliest psychedelic literature, you know, there was always this consciousness of, you know, you can soar angelic heights or you can fathom the depths of hell. I think it was Aldous Huxley that said that, you know, and there is this dark side, this light. But I know what you were saying about Eastern European strangeness. I mean, in my limited experience being a road manager on tour in the late 80s, you know, I mean, you're like at the SO getting gas on the Autostrasse or the Autobahn, and you look around out back and there's this relic of a 13th century castle. You know, it's like weird, psychedelic. Yeah.
When Greg saw us in 2018 on South by Southwest, he compared us to plastic people of the universe, right? Yeah. Of this very, very psychedelic Central Europe great thing. So yeah, I think there is something, but of course the point of psychedelic music and the point of this kind of music lays in the Western roots. Of course, you know, for example, Syd Barrett. Mm-hmm. For me, you know, Syd Barrett is one of the most important figures in the psychedelic world, and his solo albums, you know, broken albums in some way, they are for me everything.
You know, it's interesting too that, you know, a lot of the things we've been talking about, Greg, the new album B-flat A was made obviously before this latest horrible tragedy that's happening in Ukraine now. But those issues that you were talking about, denialism, etc., the songs, you know, Uniform, Twitch. It's almost like it could have been written now, describing what's happening right in front of our very eyes every night on the newscasts. So this doesn't go away. Something that happened in 1945 might as well be happening in 2022 as well. It seems to be this constant cycle. And that, I think the band has always sort of been in that mode where, you know, watch out, this could happen again. And we're sort of here. As you said earlier, you're sending up a wake-up call a little bit to the world, and here we are again, right?
Yeah, this is something which is very, very unexpected. Even if I was in some way sending warnings, of course it happened in Syria, of course it happened in Chechnya, of course we shouldn't forget about these wars, but this is unexpected, very, very big tragedy. But I wanted to say something about one more time about American culture and about USA, because the Ukraine till now was saved by United States of America. And one more time, as in the Second World War example, United States came with a big, big support and help for Europe. And it's not obvious thing, you know. When I heard Joe Biden's speech in Warsaw, I think it was very open-hearted and open-minded. And
well,
it's
that's it's nice of you to say, and we'll pass it along to Joe.
Yeah, we'll but let Joe know that you're...
You know what I was touched by? I am touched by the fact that the population of Warsaw has doubled with accepting Ukrainian refugees and with the Polish people welcoming these children and these wives into their homes for who knows how long. Maybe they'll never be able to go back to Ukraine.
I think you are right. I was also very amazed by the reaction of Polish society, and I'm very, very proud of his reaction.
Well, I think also the role of music had something here as well, because I always think that with Trupa Trupa, there was a bigger sense of why we are doing this than we just want to sell records and play shows. We're just a band. It seemed like it always meant something more. There was something more of a responsibility. I don't know. I don't want to put words in your head or mouth about what you feel the role of music is in all this, but it seems like you always saw music as having a bigger role than just being entertainment.
Yeah. I don't have anything against music, which is only entertainment, but yeah, my idea of musical world is... For me, Fugazi, you know, artists who are great in ethical way and in artistic way, this is ideal situation. And we live in the times which are very revolutionary when we think about ethics in many aspects, in Black Lives Matter aspects, in Me Too aspect, in this war on Ukraine aspect, that we will not tolerate the evil in such big way as we did in the past. I think something changed in a very good direction. Mm-hmm.
We have been thrilled to talk to the singer with Trupa Trupa, Grzegorz Kwiatkowski, and talking about this marvelous band in this incredible time that we're living in, tragic, and yet a band with a B-flat A, a record that very much addresses the times we live in. Thank you, Grzegorz, for being our guest.
It was an honor. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's it for our conversation with Trupa Trupa. Do you have thoughts on the man? Leave us a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org, or tell other listeners about it in our Facebook group.
Talk to me, don't blow my cover, let it all out. You're not my lover, you know you wanna cry. Never said never, do you wanna see me die? It's just bad weather.
Oh yeah, that is a little bit of the song Show Me Your Pretty Side by Israeli singer, songwriter, and guitarist Tamar Afek. We first aired this interview last September, and later that year, Tamar's album All Bets Are Off appeared on both of our year-end top 10 lists.
And while the political conflicts around her definitely influence her art, Tamar's a technician and a music history devotee, deeply committed to musical experimentation. So we began our conversation with Tamar by asking her about how she fell in love with underground rock and bands like Fugazi, Shellac, and more.
I think I was drawn to what I called the underground rock. I was drawn to it because of the aspect of the sound. I felt like I discovered the world of sound. It began with a guitar. You know, there are so many kinds of distortion, right? Like the distortion of Pantera isn't like the distortion of the Stooges and isn't like the distortion of Led Zeppelin. And I was very excited by the diversity in the guitar sound. Mm-hmm. And at a later point, I began being fascinated with the whole recording process of all the instruments, especially the drums, which is part of what led me to record the album in Deptone Records. We can talk a little bit later why I chose to record it there.
Yeah.
But coming from the classical world, where sound wasn't really a topic, I mean, the sound was clean, you know, either uh-huh. whether it was playing on the piano or singing in a choir with different orchestras. No one ever talked about the sound besides the sound that you produce yourself, right, as a singer, or dynamics in instruments if you play the cello. But we've never been talked to about the recording process. And I think that's one of the main things that got me fascinated with the world of the underground rock.
Yes, you mentioned Daptone Records, you know, and Daptone, of course, is a center for these wonderful old school soulful R&B sounds. What made you want to record there?
I remember when I was searching for places to record that I read an interview with the technician and co-founder of the label, Gabriel Roth, I think.
Yeah.
He recorded the Black to Black sessions, and he talked about how he prefers taking 2 weeks to find the right place to put a microphone on the drums as opposed to putting 24 microphones on the drums and making it sound like one thing, right? Because like one of the main things you confront with while mixing is that you try to glue all the microphones on the drums together to sound like one unit.
Right.
And I loved that. I loved the fact that he took that's what he said. And I felt like in the philosophical way, I felt it connected to me in the sense that I preferred touring with my band for 2 months. We toured Europe for 1 month and then the States for 1 month. And I preferred touring for 2 months to find our sweet spot as a band and record one take rather than mm-hmm. a dozen of takes. So yeah. I really loved that and connected with that. And that was one of the main reasons I chose it. It's a studio that is more familiar with soul and funk music, which I also like the idea of recording more rock. But the way they record is more old-fashioned, and the analog equipment always has this sense of realism that glues the performance together.
Yeah, a certain warmth. And of course, that's how the orchestra is recorded. Everybody's playing at once. There's one take. And you better know how to mic that orchestra.
Exactly. So maybe singing with a choir and an orchestra did influence me.
Yeah, exactly.
Unconsciously.
Do you still feel like you bring some of your classical training into what you're doing now, or do you see it as a completely different world? When you, you know, because you're talking about the way sound changed for you when you heard a distorted guitar, but are you bringing any of those classical training lessons into your songwriting and your playing currently?
That's a good question. You know, many times when people talk about genres, they talk about sound. But I believe that a genre also has an approach, an attitude. And sometimes there are a lot of similarities between genres. For example, you know, when people heard jazz band and they wanted to give it a compliment, it says it has the jazz, right? And when you see a rock and roll show, you say, yeah, this is rock and roll. And there is a certain attitude that that connects between all these genres. And one of the attitudes in the classical music is there is a lot of discipline. When you learn a part, you repeat it again and again, and there are different kinds of techniques to do that. So I feel I bring with me the discipline of the classical music training I got into my rehearsals with my band. But also I feel like if you take a song like Russian Winter, for example, and you hear the bass line, you hear a distorted bass line, and someone that isn't used to hearing this kind of music and comes from the classical world will might hear it and say, ah, this is, I don't like this, this is like too noisy, or this has a lot of distortion. But if I have a cello play that part, it will sound very classical. I mean, I still believe my arrangements are still pretty classically influenced. And also during the COVID-19 pandemic, I found myself starting doing these acoustic versions for our songs from the album in the form of chamber music. I did it with an oboe player and a cello player. And we did a session for NPR, and I did some sessions for different magazines in Europe. And it's also something that I'm very excited about, and it's fun to do.
That's cool. Well, you mentioned Russian Winter. That song is very ambitious. I think the mix of sounds and genres, it really isn't a genre. It's multiple genres in that song. So when you're writing, you're obviously not thinking about, hey, is this a rock song? Is this going to be more classically influenced? It's all kind of in a big blender, it sounds like.
Yes. I mean, I started when I got into the rock and roll world, I started as what interested me the most was the guitar. I was all about being a guitar hero and dealing.
After playing a piano when you were a youth.
Yes.
The first instrument, yes. So guitar you discover at 18, you're going to be a guitar hero.
Yes. And, I mean, explore the concept of the guitar hero. And, you know, my teachers were, you know, mostly John Frusciante, Kurt Cobain. Later I got into Wes Montgomery and B.B. King and all that. But at the beginning, it was like more about what the hell was Jimi Hendrix doing? Yeah. I was like, really? I was like, I spent a good time just like, I can't, like, no way. I have nothing to do with this. I can see it, but it won't help. And then I got my first JMP Super Bass Marshall. Now, you don't live in Israel.
Yeah.
But getting a Super Amp Marshall from the 70s in Israel, you know, it's declaring war. And it took me a lot of time to get it, but then I got it. And once I got my wah-wah pedal, I started getting a grasp of what Jimi Hendrix was doing. It's funny because Jimi Hendrix is, you know, we still didn't talk about it, but, you know, it was important for me to improvise on this album because I felt like improvisation was something that was missing a little bit from the rock albums that I listened to at the time I made the album. And I was reading a lot about how jazz records were made, and I was trying to, you know, get some techniques for improvisation. And then I remember I saw there was a show online on YouTube, the Jimi Hendrix Experience in Sweden, live in Sweden in 69. And he starts the show by saying,
"We're gonna play nothing but oldies but baddies tonight, because we haven't played together in about 6 weeks. So we're just gonna jam, see what happens tonight." Hope you don't mind. You know, we're just going to mess around this jam, see what happens. You will know the difference anyway.
And then they play, and it just sounds amazing. And it was like, I came back to Jimi Hendrix, I think, as a producer rather than a guitar player that tried to understand what he was doing. I was starting also to appreciate him as a producer in the sense that, you know, they basically improvised a lot of the show. And it also gave me this big drive of daring to improvise rock and roll on stage.
When we come back, we will hear more about Tamar's songwriting process and what the rock scene is like in Israel. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions. Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back. This week, we're talking with the multi-talented artist Tamar Afek about her album All Bets Are Off. I wanted to know if her intricate genre-blending instrumentals were part of the song construction from the start, or if she adds them later.
At the beginning, when I was exploring the Guitar Hero, so I was just about, you know, playing the guitar parts I have and build a song around it, you know, who cares, as long as I play guitar really loud and good. But then I started changing my approach completely and looking at it from a producer point of view. And in that process, I decided I'm writing all the songs on an acoustic guitar, and the arrangements and the production will come later. And basically, the way I worked on this album was, you know, I used to tell this when I talk about my production technique, you know, many times, you know, musicians have this thing, which is not bad, but it's like, it's all about don't ruin the song, you know, like the song is so important and you don't have to, you can't ruin the song. And I can't, you know, I came from Israel. I wanted to tour the States. I wanted to tour Europe for a girl from Israel. You know, who cares about the songs? Who cares about anything? I just want to tour. You know, the songs are an excuse for touring. So in the same way, I felt like the songs are an excuse to make music. I want to make music. I want to have like this really interesting bass line going in the background. And I wrote one, an interesting drum part in the background. And I want, and that's the most important thing. So the thing I would tell my musicians is, imagine the song is like a car, and now let's crash this car into a tree, and there's an accident.
Yeah, yeah.
And well, you know, I still want people to recognize that this was a car, you know, maybe I wanted them to think this was a Maserati, right? But I still want them to crash the car into a tree. And this process involves different things. It brings special things from out of the musicians. I encourage them to do things that normally other people wouldn't encourage them to do. But there are also, you know, some guidelines. I think Russian Winter and Crossbow, the basic idea was that I felt that I wanted to have this raw kind of sound and feeling. Many times I feel when I hear new music, it's like I feel I'm getting this unconscious message of like, hear me, this is very good, this is very well produced, this is shiny kind of message. And I wanted to give a different message. You know how when you're really hungry for a very, very long time, you haven't eaten anything and you don't have any food, and then suddenly you have a tomato. And there's no oil, there's no lemon, there's no salt, there's no pepper, but you're really, really hungry. So you're eating the tomato and it's like the most amazing thing you ever tasted, because suddenly you can appreciate like the raw tomato without anything. And this is the message I wanted to give. I wanted to give the message, I know how hungry you are. Here are the bass and here is the bass and here are the drums. I know you haven't heard them like this naked for a while, you know, here you can meet them again, you know, I know it's been a while. Felt like, you know, I want to hear drums for like 1 minute, 2 minutes, just drums. I mean, if I would go to a show, I would just want to hear drums for a little bit, you know. I don't need everyone together all the time. Something in the raw feeling, you know, today, especially in the DAW generation, I feel it. It's that's the thing that excited me the most, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't want you to think, Tamar, that we are obsessed with Russian Winter, because I love every track on the album. The first one I played was Show Me Your Pretty Side. But Russian Winter, right? You're talking so much about sound and musicianship and arrangements. I'm struck also by the lyrics, and I haven't seen many reviews giving you your credit there, using, you know, General Winter, as they call in Russia, right? You know, it wasn't the Russian army that defeated Hitler or Napoleon. It was the minus 30 degree temperatures in the winter.
Someone asks me, someone hits the point, yeah.
Yeah, well, you sing in that song, I'll fight the Russian winter straight into your heart. You say you can't see blood, but I plan to miss that part.
I'll fight the Russian winter straight into your heart. You say you can see blood, but I plan to miss that part.
And I was wondering, you know, how that came to you. I love that.
Yeah, it came to me while I was reading about this book about... about World War, it's the book is called, I'm not sure how you say it in English. It talks about like the crucial mistakes that have been done in different wars in history. Mm. And the turning point, like if Hitler wouldn't have went to Russia, what would have happened, you know?
Yeah.
And he explores it, but in different situations in Japan and all over the world. And yeah, during history, there were a compendium of high seas military disasters, which were a result of, you know, insufficient planning and miscalculation and meaningless ideologies. So I use this phrase more like as a metaphor for wrong decisions and choices one makes in life. And I think the way to avoid these mistakes is by each side deciding about his or her red lines in every relationship on every level, whether it's social or political or personal.
Yeah, yeah, the red lines. Well, you know, that leads into a question we have to ask you as a smart, passionate artist in Tel Aviv talking to us. It's been a hell of a couple of months and violence on every side. How do you create art in the midst of that, bombs raining down?
Yes, it's not easy. It's definitely been some challenging months, but I mean that's, you know, I chose to be a musician, and when I do music, you know, the world outside doesn't exist. I'm just, you know, in my space. And of course, songs like Russian Winter and Crossbow, you know, these are songs that are associated with destructive behavior. And I do feel like my songs, you know, the target is to put an end to all tragic statistics of violence between human beings. So I feel like it definitely influences my songs and my music. But on a day-to-day basis, I'm just me at my studio, you know, doing my thing.
Beautiful confusion, delicate plans. Beautiful solution, nothing to add.
When Israel is functioning and open, and there is not violence, do you see both your fellow Israelis and people of Arab descent coming to shows? Is the underground segregated in any way, or do people come together through music?
Not enough. There are some events. You know, personally, I live in Jaffa, which is a place where Arabs and Israelis live together in coexistence. You know, when the bombs were happening, I was you know, we go to the staircase. I sat with my Arab neighbors, and we both together talked about, you know, how unfortunate the situation is because of the extremists of both sides. Yeah. And yes, definitely, there's it's not integrated enough. There are parties and events that try to, you know, that focus on the integration, but it's difficult. It's hard.
I'm, you know, curious because you, you know, you come from a country that isn't necessarily widely known for producing great rock bands. Although I will have to say that I was a huge fan of Monotonix. That I don't know if they were, you happened to see them at all. But the one thing that struck me about Monotonix,
I just saw the singer yesterday. He's my neighbor here in Jaffa.
Is that right? That's great.
My body language says I'm not afraid.
And the thing I remember about them, Tamar, was that they were so, they set up right in the middle of the audience. It's like we're all in this together. We're not separating ourselves from the audience in any way. We're one of you. We're making a big noise here in the middle of this. And everybody was celebrating. I mean, here it is, the most jaded music conference in the world, right? All these people who had seen everything. And they're jumping up and down for Monotonix because they were so amazing at the South by Southwest Music Festival in Austin, you know, more than a decade. I think the band broke up like 10 years ago, right? Or something like that. But they were amazing. And I wonder, you know, are there more shows, more bands like that in Israel? I mean, is that kind of the vibe when you go to a show? Or how are people responding to the music in a live setting there? You know, is it like that all the time?
Well, Monotonix is definitely a special band.
yeah.
And they definitely, it's a band that also influenced me. Their guitar player, Jonathan Gatt, has a solo project now. I also have an EP that he produced, so we are good friends. Monotonix was definitely one of a kind. I would say there are a couple of Israeli bands that have the same vibe, but it's still not exactly the same. But I do feel that Monotonix brought something very Israeli. I mean, you know, on one hand, we in Israel, you know, we didn't get a chance to experience a lot of great live bands. You know, we mostly saw it on YouTube, or, you know, someone went to the States and came back with stories. We didn't experience the way people in the States experience it. And I think Monotonix brought something. On one hand, they were very influenced by a lot of American bands. I remember, do you know Federation X? Mm. Federation X were in Israel. I remember they like we were all influenced by Federation X. You know, they came with, they were so loud and heavy, and Monotonics were also, saw them and were really influenced by them. And of course, you know, they're obviously, we were listening at the time of Monotonics, you know, we were really into all these bands like Polvo and Jesus Lizard and Chillak and obviously, you know, Iggy Pop influenced Monotonics, and there are many Americans that you could sense the influence, but they still brought something very Israeli. You know, in Hebrew we say chutzpah, you know, this they brought this chutzpah like to the rock and roll, and I think that's part of what people enjoyed.
That's an interesting perspective, Greg, right? Because what I've always said about Jesus Lizard, who you just name-dropped, Tamar, is to only know the records or even the YouTube videos, you're getting about 10% of what the Jesus Lizard was, because you ain't sort of lived, especially not lived the Jesus Lizard until, you know, David Yao has been body surfing over your head, spitting and sweating on you, you know.
All I know is that life is gone.
What are you going to be able to do? Are you going to be able to tour All Bets Are Off in Europe and the States again? Are you, what are you hoping to do now that the world is slowly opening up?
Yes, I already have a European tour planned. We're working on planning our US tour. So that's definitely something that I look forward to. Yeah, and I hope to next time I tour the States, I hope to already record the next album.
Are you going to go back to Daptone?
It's a good question. It's a good question.
You know, I mean, guy Albini has a little studio here in Chicago where he talks about the joys of miking a drum set with one mic.
And, it would be a dream to record with Albini, actually. It would be a dream come true.
Oh, you know, he's got this attitude of, I'm a plumber. If your pipe is broken, I'll come over and fix your... You know, I mean, he'll work with anybody if you pay him.
Yeah, I see Albini, you know.
He should do you for free, though.
I saw a lot of interviews with Albini. So yeah, I mean, I know I have,
it's a mixed bag. He hasn't talked to me.
I have a feeling that, you know, if I, it's like, yes, sir, you know, I mean, yeah. I don't see a no, sir, there.
Well, you know, I'm a fan. You working with him like PJ Harvey, you know, I'm sure Polly Jean didn't take any crap from that guy, and I'm sure you'd put him in its place. And
I'm a fan, you know, I will be starstruck, you know?
Yeah.
All Bets Are Off. And I understand you came up with that title before the pandemic, but it seemed like it'd have extra special meaning now that we've been through this. Prophetic in a sense of the way you're approaching life now, too. I don't know. You tell me.
Good question. Yes, All Bets Are Off. I named the album before the pandemic. It was meant to symbolize uncertainties in life, in a way that, you know, deepens the cognitive dissonance one has, you know, for example, when you buy a washing machine and you're not sure you bought the best washing machine and you want to convince yourself that the washing machine is good. So you start seeing this washing machine everywhere, like you start seeing everyone buying this washing machine and it makes you feel like you did the right choice. And I mean, the name meant to represent the situation where you don't know exactly what's going to happen. And it was very relevant during the pandemic when you have a small factor like a virus canceling all the former assumptions and changing reality. But on the same time, it also has an optimistic meaning because it means everything is open, right? It's like the name has the word off in it, but actually you guys use it when you want to say that everything can happen. So you can't avoid drastic situations and changes in life. Life is about drastic changes, and life is about having unpredictable things happen to you. And once you realize that life is not something that stays stable the whole time, I think it's easier to deal with it and cope with it.
Yeah. learning to accept the unexpected.
Yes, exactly.
You must remember this. A kiss is just a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by.
We have been talking to Tamar Afek, All Bets Are Off, fantastic album. Thank you so much, Tamar.
Thank you so much for having me.
That wraps up our conversation, and now we want to hear from you. Do you have any thoughts on Tamar Afek? Leave a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org. And Grzegorz, what do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we're going to do a deep dive into the Elephant Six Collective, Neutral Milk Hotel, Apples in Stereo, Olivia Tremor Control, with an author about a great new book about the collective. And don't forget to check out our bonus podcast feed.
We did love those bands, Greg, and the entire scene that produced them. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, our associate producer Sol Delgadillo, and our intern Mary Bernthal. Our social media consultant is Katie Cott.